Welcome to The Awaken Organization.
Welcome to The Awakened Organization. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Peter.
And we have the honor to meet with awesome business owners who are striving to live in a way that is more sustainable, equitable, and just. Peter, who are we meeting with today?
Amanda Baker, COO of TeasTea, teastea.com, as well as the Founders Fund, supporting women entrepreneurs, which is a not-for-profit arm of TeasTea, separate organizations, but sister organizations. We have an amazing conversation about all sorts of things, how social and environmental solutions can sometimes be the most efficient, all sorts of functional blends about their teas and how they can increase your wellness, you know, and how B Corp certification is the ultimate test or litmus test covering all aspects of your business.
Covered Amanda's origin story, and we also found out a bit about Founders Fund and some of the awesome work that they're doing, some of the ambitious goals and the reforming of their company, and even coming from the world of TV and social media. So,
And I think lastly, you definitely want to tune in. You find the origin story of Jeremy's obsession with Kim Kardashian throughout the whole podcast.
And we'll edit brilliant. That. Thanks.
Yeah.
Perfect. So let's start just like a landing where we're at. So maybe a high and a low from your week. Amanda, you're in Miami. There's got to be something to that and some international business travel and all that. So just a high and a low, we can all arrive and then we can just start chatting.
Yeah. So Miami was kind of a last minute trip because there were $200 round trip tickets direct from Ottawa. So I'm not technically here for business. I am here with Sheena, our founder and CEO, and we are talking a lot of business, but it was just kind of a spur of the moment thing. So I guess that's a high for me to be able to just be like, hey, Miami, never been there. Seems kind of fun. A low. I hate this, but supply chain is always a low for me because it's so complicated, especially when you're doing it responsibly and ethically. And Christmas is technically tomorrow if you work in a product-based e-commerce company. So I'd say dealing with supply chain has been my low for the week. How about you guys?
Jeremy.
Yeah. High for me is first weekend in probably three weekends where I've not been sick. I got some COVID or toddleritis. I got some small kids and they just lick the bottom of shoes sometimes for fun. Like just, no, I'm going to get whatever you get. So the high is feeling good. Low, it is, I've got a like 48 hour bad case of the Mondays. I was talking to you earlier about that, but just, oh man, started off rough yesterday and it's been rough till today.
So, what's up with people anyways?
People. Seriously. More people problems. I don't know. People.
For myself, hi. Yeah, yesterday we're a marketing agency over here in Ottawa, Amanda. So we landed our biggest contract yesterday. Yay. Out of the blue.
Well done.
For a little boutique spot here, who's pretending to know what we're doing. So that was cool. And we got a really nice email. I have to tell you this from the CEO. It's a forum for international trade training. So it helps people go take their Canadian businesses internationally. And she writes us to say like, you had such lovely references. I hope we're on the reference list one day. And I said, that's so nice. We haven't even worked together, but I hope you're on the reference list too. Low, I'm feeling my first case of old manness. I have like tendonitis in my knee from overtraining and I have a race in 6 weeks and I was low key first world depressed. And then I saw for physio this morning who says I'm not totally falling to shit. And so now my spirits are back and my first world problems are addressed. So I'm feeling better.
Good. I mean, 6 weeks is still some time for you to correct.
Yeah.
If you needed to, though, right?
It's a 13-hour event, so I got to get like this thing down pat, yo.
Damn. Yeah.
And then read David Goggins' book and realize that you could run on a broken leg for 24 hours.
Yeah, I got it, dude. I will show up with a broken leg. Like I will. So this other guy run into this old like Obi-Wan Kenobi of marathon running, and he's like, "You just need to get to the finish line." He's like, "You need to stop the bullshit, stop the madness." Like, do you remember? that lady Powder. Anyways, she had the buzz cut of like super blonde hair. She's like, stop the insanity. And he was just like, shut up, get your shit together and get to the starting line. I said, all right, fine.
I mean, sometimes you need that.
Totally. Like, I needed that in that moment.
The Kim Kardashians of the world to just tell people to get up and work.
Gotta do it. Yeah. Gotta go.
That caused such a wave in the women's entrepreneurship space. People were so pissed about that Kim Kardashian thing, but it was really interesting. Anyway, but tough love is necessary, I think, sometimes. And sometimes it's useful.
Yeah. It was so
there's probably a T for that tendonitis, Peter.
Ooh, there is.
We just happen to be talking to Amanda.
Anti-inflammatory?
Yep, turmeric tonic. I can send some your way.
Do it. I'm in. Where do I order? Should I just go online now? I got to support the business. I can't take.
I'll just send it to you.
All right. Deal. Well, I'll send you the email for mud water.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Deal. So Amanda, we do want to talk about teas, but we wanted to start with you and learn a bit about what got you into this crazy journey of doing good and saving the world while building a strong business. Mm-hmm. And we sort of LinkedIn stalked you, low key. And so maybe you've been on this saving the world journey for a little bit. So maybe you can tell us what in your life brought you to wanting to do more than just make money and be the next Kim Kardashian.
Ooh, yeah. Wow. I didn't know you were going to like throw me all the way back to like teenage Amanda days. I had to like take a second to be like, ooh, that woman. I think that what really got me interested in the idea of business for good was way before there was even words for it. I got interested in food security. I initially wanted to be a chef when I was a kid, you know, as a lot of kids do. It's like a very romantic trade to like look up to. And so I went to culinary school at George Brown in Toronto. And I was so interested in the way that food traveled across the world and the power and influence that was involved in food and the inequalities in food. I think that the thing that I learned that really got me was that world hunger is not actually a food issue. It's a distribution issue, and it's a distribution of power issue. And that just hit me so hard that I became so invested in business and the way that it intersects with equality. And so I started going down that path and I was looking at a lot of community food centers as, you know, something that I would potentially want to be in for my career. And I was looking at a lot of charities and I was looking at all these things and I was talking to people working at charities and doing some really incredible work, but they were all so fucking miserable and they were all burnt out and they were trying to do really incredible things with like no resources. And they weren't able to take care of themselves. And I was just like, shit, like, is this really what it is? If you do good, you have to like sacrifice yourself. Like, is this what the cost you pay is for doing good? And so I spent years, like I was a pastry chef and I worked at David's Tea. I was one of the first employees at David's Tea, but I was doing all these things in the food industry where there was always some kind of either social justice or equality work involved. So when I was a pastry chef, I was a vegan pastry chef. And at David's Tea, I was really interested in the ethical teas coming from different parts of the world. And so I kind of pursued this in a lot of different ways, but I was really disheartened because I thought, you know, at the end of my career, or when I get to like that point where I feel successful in my career, I'm probably going to feel like shit as a human being because I'm going to be so depleted. So I was just kind of like swimming in those waters, being like, oh, like I'm going towards this thing, but it doesn't really feel like it's going to be long-term sustainable if I want to be a happy person and also make an impact. Anyway, so a chance volunteer opportunity brought me to Public Inc. Public Inc. is a social impact marketing agency. And I learned about them when I was volunteering for this campaign that they were doing called Vote for a Party. They were trying to increase voter registration for people like 18 to 35 or something. So the idea was they were standing outside of polls and being like, hey, if you vote, we'll give you this token for a beer that you can get at this local brewery like next door. So it was pretty much like, if you vote, we're going to give you beer. And I liked that concept too, because it was like very scrappy and fun, but also got a ton of impact. And so I started talking to Public Inc. and I was pretty much like, whatever job you have, I want it. Like I'll clean the floors. Like I don't care. So I landed at Public after a couple months after talking to them, and they had like a very general like office role. Like they were a startup at the time. So it was kind of like, I don't know, can you figure out like filing systems, and can you figure out like how to set up the internet? Like it was very general, and I was just happy to be there because it was the first time in my life that I was introduced to profit and purpose as a collaborative thing. The way that Philip Hayde, the CEO of Public, describes it as profit and purpose actually work together. The more profit you have, the more purpose or impact you can have. And the more purpose or impact you have, the more profit you can have, because it should be part of your marketing for sure. Like you should make money if you're doing good, and you should do good if you're making money. So this idea was like revolutionary to me. Like it changed my entire way of looking at the world. It changed my way of looking at my everyday purchases in life. Like as a consumer, it changed, and it changed like the optimism I had for the future of my career. Cause I was like, wow, like this is something. And that was before people were saying social impact and social, all this stuff. Social responsibility wasn't a thing. Like this was way before all of that. Like every single client that came through Public Inc. store, we had to educate them about what social impact was and why it was valuable and why we weren't just like hippies high-fiving in like a room with a ping pong table. You know, so it was at the time, it was very new and fresh. And that was really exciting for me.
That's awesome. It's funny how we arrive at these things, like these pivotal moments. Jeremy, what about you? What was yours? Did you have one?
That origin story, Amanda. It was kind of, it was kind of two. Like one was in the teen years. And so I went like, it sounded a little bit like kind of where Amanda was at, like a little bit more activism and activist oriented of like, man, this shit's broken. I want to make it better, but not really finding the avenue or the vehicle. And then it was, the Green MBA program that I did in the early 2000s that really started to like open my eyes to different organizations like Mondragon in Spain. That was like they're a largest co-op in the world, like 20 billion in revenue. And nobody ever thinks of a co-op, you know, one worker, one vote with 100,000 employees being that big. So I was just like, there's another model. It's not all Microsoft or, you know, Monsanto or whatever. And so similar to Amanda, was like this, oh wait, there's like a whole other option that exists that doesn't just have to, you know, treat people in the environment like shit in order to make money. And so that was kind of what inspired me early on. And Mondragon was the one that really, really kind of changed my perception that there's alternative business structures too that exist. And so that's kind of why we're on the path towards employee ownership. And yeah. And I love the stories, the success stories along the way. And then one of the first ones was Interface Flooring. They're a rug manufacturer, like Midwest US, and they did like airport carpets. And the CEO had some revelation, I'm probably butchering his origin story, but he had some like revelation of all the carpet that was going to landfill, because none of it was reusable. And he committed to being a net zero company. This was like 80s, 90s kind of a thing. And in the 90s achieved this like net zero, or it might have been in the early 2000s, but achieved this net zero with carpeting, of like being able to completely strip it apart, take it apart, and, you know, recycle, reuse, whatever, all the components and all of the flooring. And it had a huge impact. So supply chain and environmental degradation and damage. As that was one of the early just examples of like, oh, it's a remake the way we make things. And the book Cradle to Cradle, I don't know if you've read that, William McDonough. It's the idea, instead of like something going from cradle to grave, which is most products, is you make it and then you throw it away. Cradle to Cradle is that you make it and then it returns to the stream from which it came from. So if it's organic compounds, it's compostable. Tease. Or if it's from the, you know, technological stream, then it's reusable. So copper, wire, metal, plastics, all this stuff can be reused. And just to not build things in such a way that they cannot be deconstructed and reused. And there's a whole certification on cradle to cradle. It's just a different way of designing things. And even like to business parks, where the waste output of one building is the input for the next. So it might be, you know, hot water or steam or some other you know, grain out
of a
brewery or something. And it's the ingesting for the biofuel of the, you know, the building next door. And then they start, you know, and just like that, like these eco industrial parks. I'll get off.
I love that. And I love a lot of times I'm seeing that the solutions to social and environmental issues are actually the most efficient financially as well. And that's where I get really stoked when I'm like, this is a win on both fronts. You can't always do it. It's like a fine balance and technology needs to catch up and some things like that. But when you can do that, it's just like, God damn, that's just like, oh, chef's kiss for business. You know, it's like win, win, win all around. And that should be the goal. And I think that it's interesting the way that we're starting to shift to see leaders in business as leaders for society in so many ways, because I think that true entrepreneurs are problem solvers. Like, that's what they do. That's their fuel for life. So like, if you have a problem with an environmental thing, give it to somebody who is an entrepreneur. They're going to figure it out. So I think that it's beautiful that we're using those types of minds and applying them to like some big world situations.
Not to demean any of our nonprofit friends, because they absolutely provide a valuable and huge safety net to the world. But I love market-based solutions because that efficiency piece is just baked in. It's just problem-solving and efficiency, and the competition aspect means that it really needs to be good and needs to be valuable or it's not going to have a market. And that just... some of the solutions that come out of market-based social entrepreneurship solutions are like mind-blowing, amazing ideas that it took some real ingenuity to come up with.
Yeah. And if you're burnt out working in a charity because you're under-resourced and, you know, you're working like 90 hours a week or something, you're probably not going to have the brain capacity to come up with those solutions, right? And not to say everybody working in nonprofits or charities are burnt out. Just I interviewed a lot of people when I was going into that, and there was some real consistent patterns.
Well, the research shows that all of their upper level management from executive director on down are underpaid, I think by 40 or 50% if not more to the private sector. And there is that complex of you feel bad for taking money to try it because that could be going back to the recipients of said funds. And so there's this guilt accompanied with this work, which is this whole battle around admin costs for charities, which is a totally different topic, which pisses me off. But anyways, because we work with a lot of charities as well, and trying to help them get out of their own way oftentimes is not easy. And so I like the market as a forcing function for creativity and innovation. It just, you're not getting grants and subsidies to make this happen, right? You got to provide value to somebody out there who wants to give you a buck to do it, right? So we're on a small digression here, Amanda. I apologize.
Yeah, sorry. I got very excited.
No, I'm excited too. Well, maybe, so funny enough, these interviews go all over the place. So we definitely wanted to hear your story, but clearly getting into these systemic conversations are where bigger change is going to happen. So I have a question for you. You said when social and environmental are sometimes the most efficient solutions, has that manifested itself for Teas? Are there any?
Definitely has. So it's so interesting when we this past year, we completely remade our business. Sheena has been running Teas for the last 8 years. So the company has like undergone a lot of different like eras, I want to call it, because they were all really valuable and we've built on them. But we've kind of like gone back to our roots, so to speak. In September, we relaunched and we really were focusing on functional blends versus just tea bases, because that's how Sheena actually got into blending teas. Is she was introduced to tea after working in hospitality, and she really needed things that were going to do more than what coffee could. So that's when she started blending these functional blends. But with that, she wanted to be able to do something that was a little bit more innovative than what she's seen in the space. A lot of tea companies, like tea bags, are made out of plastic or bleached cotton, which a lot of people don't know, which is really like interesting to me that people are feeling like, what do you mean? My other tea bags aren't biodegradable, but it's not the most cost efficient to build a tea bag like that all the time, where it does become a little bit more cost efficient, not directly for us, but in general, is this stuff is backyard compostable. You can throw it in an organics bin, and it's not contributing to the waste of a city. So really, like, when we think about infrastructure, that's where the savings are for a biodegradable product. Although our cost of goods are higher, and a lot of that has to do, we're still a small company. So we still don't have the buying power that hopefully we will in a couple of years. But it was important for us. And it's interesting because that's why people come to us for that differentiator, for that, you know, we're being so conscious about the way that we're building these products, that in itself makes us money. You know, like, part of our marketing is just telling people what we do and how we do it. And there are other traditional tea companies that can't keep up with that. So they don't have that differentiator in a market that, like, let's be honest, I think everybody's heard of tea. Like, show me a person on the planet that has not heard of tea, right? So that's also where, although the product is costing us more, it's actually like a huge differentiator in our marketing and a huge value add that we're seeing people come to us specifically for.
Yeah, the other stock-based companies, it's harder to pivot when you have shareholder pressure to hit EBITDA numbers. So to go and increase the cost of your tea bag or whatever, as much as they're trying to greenwash or social wash their activities as much as they can, not all of them, but some, makes it hard for them to compete because they're there to drive shareholder value at all costs, right?
Exactly. And that's how greenwashing does happen, right? Because, like, they've got pressure from people to make money. So if they go to something that's like, you know, if they're going to say the contents of our tea bags are biodegradable, because what they mean is like tea leaves are biodegradable, they could say that, I'm sure, and not get caught for a long time. And maybe some consumers would be like, oh, the contents of their bags are biodegradable. Like, that's great for the planet. But what they don't realize is the tea bag itself is toxic.
I have a question on tea then. I haven't seen your packaging, but I get, I get loose leaf now, so it's different. But in the packs are actually like this aluminum foil with the tea bag you pull out of. So that's also not recyclable from what I understand.
Ours are biodegradable. Yeah. That shiny foil pack that we have is actually a plant-based fiber. So it's made from corn and sugarcane. Which is really exciting because it doesn't look like it. Like, it looks like a foil pack. But if you, like, touch them, when you get your turmeric tonic, you'll see. Like, when you, like squish it, it's got, like, this crinkly kind of effect, and you can tell that it's not quite the same as a regular foil.
Peter, we'll do a special pot unboxing, and you can eat the whole tea bag wrapped. No,
my daughters would be so psyched if I see her on camera. But
Just eat the whole thing. Get the full benefit.
Just ingest it directly. Like, yeah.
Peanuts with shells. I love it.
Brew is optional.
Can you tell us a bit about teas and what brought you to teas?
Yeah, so the world of tea has always been really interesting to me, mainly because of the way it travels across the world. So this is going back to the food security thing with me a little bit, because tea has a really interesting political history. It's been used as currency. It's been wars have been started about tea. There's tea specific to so many different cultures and growing regions. It's just something that I think unifies us and also defines and sometimes separates us. So I've always been interested in the world of tea. I started working at David's Tea when I was like 20 years old, like way back when David's Tea was just the one spot on Queen Street, and it was actually in a Le Chateau. So that's how small it was. It was like a pilot project kind of thing. Yeah, it wasn't a permanent spot of its own. It was like in a corner of Le Chateau. But I started to learn about tea there and learn about the different types of tea and the different health benefits of tea and how to brew things properly, because different kinds of tea require different temperatures of water and things like that. Yep. And so I got so interested in tea. And when I left David's Tea, I actually then managed a restaurant that was tea themed. So I kind of continued my tea knowledge there. And then after that point, I thought that tea was just kind of like an interest and a hobby of mine, but I was still very in it. I was always like blending my own stuff and always very curious when there was like a new tea shop in town. So then about 2 years ago, Sheena was actually looking for somebody to launch Founders Fund. And Founders Fund is our sister organization at Tees that funds and mentors women in business. So it's a big part of what we do for social impact. And Sheena was looking for somebody to help launch Founders Fund. And I initially signed on for that because I was like, social impact, helping women. I had already been doing this kind of peer circle. I had a very small business and there was other women in Toronto that were a similar energy to me. And I was facilitating a monthly peer circle where I'd bring in speakers and we'd all learn together and we'd all kind of, you know, we'd vent, we'd celebrate, we would talk all things business. And so it was kind of like Founders Fund on a mini scale. So when I saw that Sheena was looking for somebody to do Founders Fund and she had these big visions for it, I was like, hell yeah, sign me up. So pretty much Sheena and I didn't know each other before I got brought on to Founders Fund. And then we started working together and we just realized that we were so values aligned and worked in a really similar way that like less than a year after I was at Founders Fund, like maybe 7 or 8 months in, she was like, listen, I want you to run both companies. And I said, no. I said, absolutely not. Like, I'm swamped as is. This is too much. Like, I can't possibly do both. And then she said, okay, I understand. Like, it's a lot. Like, that's fine. And then like, you know, 2 days later, well, what if you ran both companies? And I was like, we already had this conversation. So the thing about Sheena is, you know, I think
she's relentless.
She's relentless. She's really great with being relentless. But she's also very persuasive. She's very compelling. And so eventually I was like, fine, like I'll do it. I'll run the two. Like, we'll see how it goes. And I've just been so in love with it ever since. Like we've got to rebuild the company together and we certified for Benefit Corporation shortly before I joined the team. Actually, I certified us, but I was a contractor at that time. And that also, I think, really solidified our working relationship and also the value I saw in Tees as a company, because Sheena was kind of accidentally socially and environmentally conscious and it had kind of built Tees around her own values. When I went to certify us for Benefit Corporation status, it was, I'm not going to say it's easy because that process is incredibly grueling, like yep. So hard. Like I'm very pro certification, but anti certification process because it's so inaccessible. That's another topic for another day, maybe. But, but Sheena was just so on board with every recommendation I had. And she already had like a bunch of like policies and ways of doing things that were like light years beyond what a traditional business would have been doing. So that really solidified what I wanted to build with Tees and where I saw Sheena and my working relationship going to. And it's been really great ever since. Like I mentioned, we relaunched everything last September, so not even a year yet, with fully biodegradable. We believe we're the first fully biodegradable blend collection in the world. We have not seen it anywhere else. Somebody's welcome to like show me another brand, but we keep looking and it doesn't seem like anybody else has been able to do it. We invested so much time and energy, making sure that every aspect of it was intentional, even like down to the way that the packaging is designed. Like every blend has a quote from somebody in the Founders Fund community.
Awesome.
And it's typically like related to the blend too. So it's like we were trying to hit all angles from social, environmental, and then also just like community support. So yeah, it's been a journey.
You guys are rock stars.
We try. I mean, some days we feel really cool. Other days, not so much. It's like a Monday on a Tuesday, right, Jeremy?
It's always a Monday. So wait, how did you run two businesses after not wanting to run two businesses? Like, how did that actually work out?
Like logistically?
Yeah. So you were swamped with
sustainably.
One.
Sustainably.
Yeah, sustainably. Yeah. So we were just talking, you know, very kindly about how nonprofits tend to overwork and underpay their people. How did you pull off?
It was rough for a while. I really had to figure out the balance. And we did end up bringing a contractor onto Founders Fund to help support me, which was great because I had already been building Founders Fund. So I already had the processes and stuff in place. We started building the team at Tees too. It really wasn't it wasn't as bad as it sounds. I knew that it was going to be a period of time where I was going to be running the show on both sides. And of course with Sheena's insight and support, but it was just rough for a couple of months while I was figuring it out and really like getting my brain around like going from a company that was product-based and had like direct customers to a company that was like community-based and had like kind of more servicing needs for that community, you know? So it was two completely different skill sets. But now that I know both companies so well and that I've really built out this iteration of Tees alongside Sheena and built up Founders Fund, I see where they intersect and where they support each other like so easily. Like we do this thing around after Black Friday, there's Giving Monday. Do you guys know about this? I feel like it's still okay. So Giving Monday, it's when typically companies who have made a ton of money at Black Friday do like a Giving Monday campaign. And well, it's true, but it's, I'm good with it. So long as the money's going to the right spot,
100%.
They typically they donate or they support an organization that is for social or environmental good. So what we do on our Giving Monday is we actually like ask our Founders Fund community, because Founders Fund is very scrappy and very not sanitized business. It's very like honest, people-centric business. So we go to our Founders Fund community and we're like, listen, like, what do you need? Like, what physical items would make your life easier for your business? Whether it's like a office chair, a new computer, a meal plan delivery, like if you haven't had a chance to eat, because like, let's be honest, like people run businesses. And if you're not good as a person, you're not going to be able to run your business. So we ask them what they need. And then we get a ton of submissions every year. And then at Tees, that's what our Giving Monday is about. And we always, you know, we do our best to like top it up and really hype it up and get as much money as possible. And we just go and we ship these items to the women that have submitted what they need. And I love that. And I think that the spirit of both companies is really alive in that example of partnership, because it's just so direct. Like the impact is just so immediate. Like it's like 2 days later, a business owner opens her front door and there's an office chair there, you know? And it's just like, here you go. No strings attached. Here you go. Enjoy.
Sweet.
Yeah. So that was the advantage of me being so involved with both, I think. A couple rough months though, maybe.
Shh, we won't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Don't tell Sheena.
She knows.
She might have been there. Yeah. So Jeremy's certified B Corp with DeepNet, and we have just finished our application process and are about to submit. So, thank you. It's that in and of itself, to your point, has been a journey. That's a lot of frigging questions in one spot and a lot of supporting documents to put together. Mm-hmm. Why was it important to you /Tees to get certified? You guys are already do-gooders.
Yeah. So this is a question I get a lot because I talk a lot about B Corp and I consult for B Corps as well. So B Corp is important to me because it vets every part of the business. There's a lot of certifications mm-hmm. that are very singular in what they look at and how they evaluate. For me, B Corp is the only thing that is looking at every single aspect of your business. If you guys remember, there's like a question about what kind of cleaning products you use in your office. So I love that example because it's just like the type of stuff you never think about. I had certified a few companies before I certified Tees, Public Inc., the marketing agency I worked for. Yep. That was like one of my first tasks is people were like, we don't know what to do with this thing, but we want it. Can you figure it out? So that's really how I became a master of B Corp is like, it was just like thrown on my desk like week two at Public. But I love it. And I love it because it also, it helps you build out your internal processes so that you can scale in a socially and environmentally responsible way. I certify a lot of smaller companies and I tell them, like, I'm going to give you processes that you're going to have to grow into. Like, you might not think that you need a parental leave policy because you've got like one employee and it's like, you know, your husband or something, but like you will need that eventually if you're going to get where you want to go. So I love that about B Corp is like, it really helps inform like the way that you're building your structure as well. But that's kind of the sneaky thing about the B impact assessment is they don't tell you that you can actually use it to inform your policy making and your processes, they're kind of like, do you have this? And so people read that and go, oh, shoot, I don't have that. I don't have enough employees to have a policy like that in place. I guess I don't get those points. And it's like, no, build the processes, build the policies. What's that movie that it's like, build it and he will come?
They will come. Yeah. Feel the dreams.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It's like, you gotta build it first. And I think that the team and the success and all that will come. But I feel like that's like a sneaky thing about the B impact assessment is it's not positioned as like, here's a tool to help you build your internal processes and your supplier relations and all that, depending on your industry. Yeah. It's just kind of like a, do you have this? Yes or no?
Yeah. The one the one on the assessment that got me was, who are your top 20% suppliers, vendors that you buy stuff from? And are they privately owned, publicly owned, BIPOC, minority owned? Like, who are they? And I was like, I don't know. I came up with this list. I was like, holy crap, we spend a lot of money with Amazon. We spend a lot of money with whoever. And I was like, is this a private company? Is this a public? And so it was like all this research about the people that we spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars with every year. I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, where we spend our money matters. And then,
yeah.
And they just asked the question of like, who are they? And here's the things we want to know about them. And that was it. And I was just like, oh, time to audit all of our vendors and replace them with purpose-driven companies. Done.
Yeah. And isn't that great though? Because now you feel good about that. It's like a blind spot you didn't know you had. And now you can address it and feel good. It's kind of like, I call it like a physical for your company because it's so invasive and intimate. And like, it can be really embarrassing too when you're like, I've never heard of a whistleblower policy. Like a lot of people say that to me when I'm like, here's like what a whistleblower policy is and this is how you do it. They're like, I've never even, should I know that? Am I a bad like owner for not knowing that? But yeah, it's intense.
I would say 30% of the shit I didn't know of. Like I was reading on this stuff. I'm like, people actually put that in place. That's a lot of work. The whole thing was like, this is a lot of work, but we built a team member guide after it and we implemented stuff. And the thing that hit me as a, you know, we started Karma Dharma 5 years ago now is we're 11 full time with contracts and stuff. How transparent are you about your numbers and your profits and your impact statements and all this? And it's like, immediately we started that following week, we shared all of our numbers. Here's what it looks like. And it's like, what was funny is, first of all, I was scared shitless. But secondly, I was like, everybody's like, wow, I'm so excited to understand how this all works and what we're doing with their money.
Wow, entrepreneurship, isn't that great?
Yeah.
They're like, how are we
still? Last year, we lost $7,000. How do we still have jobs? Yeah.
Where did that come from, Peter? Oh, yeah, you lost it. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you for that. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I'm semi-kidding, but not.
Totally.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. Because at Public, I was trying to rally to get salary disclosure so that everybody knew what everybody else made so that we could ensure that everybody was being paid properly. Because if you're, you know, example, a woman and your peer is a man and you have similar expertise and experience, like you want to be able to check that to make sure that you're not getting paid less because that happens. But anyway, it's like that was too much and too scary. And I totally get that. But I think that that level of radical transparency is going to become more and more normal.
I agree.
With the future of work.
Yeah, and
like that, I agree. Like the pandemic has done some very horrible things, but some very cool shit in terms 100%. Of the way that we work and the way that business is too. I was shocked when like that Elon Musk thing that came out, he's like, everybody must be. And I'm like, you are a technology company and like the biggest collector of data, like in the history of the world. Like you don't know how to measure your team's outputs. Like I'm so confused at that. Cause like if somebody on my team doesn't do their job, I know cause it affects the company. So it's like, why is it a problem for people to work remotely if you're able to measure their value in their role? But anyway, I think
that was a bit strange, especially as he's like going to buy Twitter. You're like, you're bringing them back old school, like from the 20s. Come back to the factory.
Yeah.
So it was a bit weird.
Super weird. I just don't understand the logic of it.
Yeah. That's a whole other podcast to that. We can get into that analysis. Yeah,
that'd be fun.
That would be
a reoccurring guest.
You're welcome anytime. I think we should.
Elon Musk painted that picture behind Peter, actually.
The poor pitcher gets so much hate. I think it's beautiful. It does. It's like sunshiny. It's like flowers. It's botanical. So I love it because it like suits teas.
Everybody in my office. So being now recently turned 48 and six out of the 11 people seem to be born between 94 and 95. That's like my grandmother's painting. That's like so pretty. I feel, thank God it's not in my office. And I'm like, yeah, aww. You can go somewhere. And yeah, I like,
that's subtle
gesture. Yes, very subtle. Talk to us a bit about Tees. What's the big dream for Tees? Is there like a big, hairy, audacious goal you guys got set out for yourself?
Yeah, I think the big non-measurable goal for Tees is that wellness and innovative wellness, like using adaptogens and like certain herbs, will become accessible for everybody, will become comfortable for everybody so that people can really be in charge of their own wellness and not rely on like crazy pills that are going to cost you $80 a month or whatever if you get a subscription, because they're going to be 110 if you don't, and all these things. So that's really the big goal, is like to make wellness and modern wellness accessible for everybody. On like the business goal side, I really want to see Tees everywhere. Like I want a product that is biodegradable, that puts people's wellness first, that is at an accessible price point in the wellness category. I want that to be widely available to everybody, no matter where you are. Because I think that when we think about wellness and the products that are available, we think about big cities. We think about, you know, sexy cities like Miami and people taking care of their health there. But we don't often think about people living in more rural areas not taking care of their health. And I think that as people start to diversify where they are living, another result of the pandemic and another result of remote work, I think that we're going to see a lot more need for more modern support in all areas, but especially wellness, because that is becoming more and more of a concern for people and more of a focus.
As people are cracking out at the speed of life, left, right, and center, it's like an epidemic to watch people just cracking under the pressure of speed and expectation out of life. Sorry, this is a total digression, but I'm just watching it with a 15-year-old and 12-year-old girls at my house, and the pressure of an unopened snap. And then I'm like, wow, that's a thing. So you guys don't talk, you just exchange photos of each other. Yeah. And he didn't open that random photo of the side of your head? No. And then like the quasi tears. And I'm like, and then I expand that into just like adults. And I'm like, wow, this, like we joked about keeping up with the Joneses, but it is like taking this massive friggin' toll on people's mental health. So I'm down with you on the wellness, but I think at times it seems like an epidemic unto its own, you know?
You're totally right. And it's interesting because I think that with all this obsession about like social media and all going so fast and burning ourselves out, we look to like really bizarre wellness trends sometimes. Like things like a lot of pills and stuff, you know, a lot of supplements are very expensive and come in pill format, but that's not typically the most comfortable or easiest way to take a supplement. And sometimes not like the best to actually absorb those nutrients.
You don't absorb it into the bloodstream. Yeah.
A lot of times like water soluble, like tea, is actually the way to go. And it's also just like a comfortable format, and it's there's nothing scary about it.
Everybody needs to drink more water. I mean, come on. Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, swap water out for some herbal concoctions.
Maybe. That's what I'm saying. Everybody needs to drink more liquid. Don't need more pills.
Doesn't it count if it's tea? It's still drinking water, no?
It depends what kind of tea. Because I feel like if it's got caffeine in it or something like that, it might not be exactly the same thing. But most of our blends are actually caffeine free, because most of our blends are there for the functionality of it, right? But we do have some caffeine blends.
Could you share just a little bit about Founders Fund and the kind of vision goal there? So we just covered Tees. I'd love to hear the sister side.
So I'll tell you a little bit of the origin story about Founders Fund, because I think that it makes the most sense in that context. Sheena, when she was building Tees, she really didn't have access to a lot of resources at all. Sheena and I have very similar backgrounds where we didn't go to business school. We weren't from families that went to business school or engaged in politics or finance in a big way. Like we're very, we lovingly call ourselves like white trash families. So we came from like very like working class. And so Sheena found that when she did get to a stage where she was opening her business, she didn't have access to a lot of resources, including people to ask advice from, finances, how to do things. And so she was kind of just wading around in this big pool of like opportunity and possibility, but she didn't know which way to go. And luckily, Sheena is an exceptional human and learns very quickly. So she was able to figure it out after many, many challenges. But once she got to a certain point where Tees was a stable business, she was making profit, she was feeling good about it, she was reflecting on her journey and she was like, you know, it shouldn't be this hard. Like it should not be this hard. I shouldn't have had to like go through all the things that I did just to get financing and just to get advice. Like we shouldn't be holding these secrets in. We should be like sharing them with community. So Founders Fund really came out of a desire to share knowledge, to share accessible funding. And when I say accessible funding, I mean easy to apply to. I mean like non-equity, no payback, like literally here's your money and do what you need to do with it. So that's really where the spirit of Founders Fund came from. And with that, we have mentors that people can book on the website, like completely open for anybody to just go and book a mentor based on the mentor's profile. Our funding, which we will be announcing our funding finalists very shortly. Our funding is really easy and accessible. It takes you under 30 minutes to apply to. It's not this huge government grant thing that takes like 4 hours and like a piece of your soul. We also have like support classes while you're applying for the really short 30-minute funding. We're like, let us do a support class so you can ask us questions and we can give you advice. We're just trying to support women because women is really, that's where we saw like the biggest disparity in business. We're trying to support it to be easier for women to be exceptional in business. And without a lot of the bullshit that we've seen from traditional business supports, because a lot of it is really inaccessible. A lot of it is really, really lacks diversity of all sorts. And a lot of it is just very sanitized. Like if you've ever been to like a business networking function, you know that feeling where it's like, you're not really humans. You're just kind of like playing a role. That's not Founders Fund at all. Like every time we bring somebody into the Founders Fund community to do a session or we have quarterly conferences that are virtual to make them accessible. Anytime we do something like that, I'm like, come as a human. Don't come just as a business owner. Like if you are most comfortable in your pajamas, show up like that. It's okay if you curse, like whatever is you is what we want. We don't want like this sanitized pantsuit wearing like person, you know? So that's, I think, part of the magic of Founders Fund too, aside from like funding and mentorship and community, is like we do it in a way that we're here for humans, not just the business part.
And I'm getting, that's amazing. And there's a theme that's emerging here. A couple episodes ago, I talked to Mike over at Delphi and Leading Change, and similar kind of their, you know, purpose-driven for-profit and then their mentorship program, which is around emerging leaders. And it seems to be mentorship just continues to seem to come up as being the thing that's been lacking. Similarly, like I can resonate, with, you know, similar to you, Amanda, it's like this moment of like, oh, there's another way. It's like, where are those mentors that show the other way as opposed to media and TV and whatever that's showing the way, which is not the narrative that I was able to embrace. So I'm super excited that you guys are engaged in mentorship, entrepreneurship with women. That's great. We had another podcast guest, Carolina, who's all about helping other women entrepreneurs. So it seems that there are people that are rising to fill the need, which is very heartening. And my last question for you is just, what are you seeing in terms of sustainability writ large, like the overall movement? B Corp just surpassed 5,000 member. Like what are you seeing in this macro scale of like, you know, is something good coming?
I think something good is coming. And I actually think that you hit on it when you were talking about the cradle to cradle thing. I think we're going to see a lot of closed loop supply chains, a lot of things like going back into the earth or going back into being manufactured into other items. I think that we're going to, I know for sure, we're going to see companies that are not doing that are going to lose money. If you are not a social or environmentally focused company in 2022, your time is limited.
Ooh.
You're on your deathbed.
Ooh, a new kind of closed loop. I love it. buying from other eco-friendly vendors, right?
Yeah,
other
people
sourcing, like closing the cradle to cradle within the, right? So not only on the product supply chain side, but also just in how your dollars spent, the circular economy side.
For sure. And you saw that when you said you were vetting all your suppliers and it took you so long to really realize like, wow, this is a big issue. Yeah. The more we look at that, I think the more that we continue to look at life and business holistically, I think that we're going to see a lot of strides in the quality of human connection, human life, the planet, everything. Like it's all connected.
So is Tees ever going to have a coffee product?
Ooh, oh my God. I would kind of love that in a way. I'm not sure what it would look like. It would definitely be some like botanical infused. Yeah, it might be like a mud water situation maybe. There's a couple of coffee companies doing some really great stuff though, like Four Sigmatic and stuff, doing like mushroom based coffees, and they're pretty ethically sound when you look at their supply chain. So,
do you have any psilocybin mixes? Is that coming down the pipeline?
What? Give me that mud water document. Maybe I'll make an exception. Yeah.
So I thought Four Sigmatic was sourcing a lot from China. I don't know if
they?
I'm right about that. I thought so.
Bastards.
Oh, no. You know, I could be wrong because there was one mushroom coffee company that was really good. And I remember they had all of their supply chain like mapped out on their website, and they had like a lot of verifying tools for it. And I was really impressed. And so, you know, if somebody's already doing something incredible in a space, like I don't really see a need to like move into
steal
that
their
space.
Thunder.
Yeah, well, if somebody's already
the folks
exactly
over at Salt Spring Coffee Company are legit sustainability do-gooders and would potentially
OG
have a great
Corp
partnership
too.
Opportunity to.
Oh my God, that'd be so cool.
That'd be a fun collab because they're just.
Or just have like a bundle or something that was like a coffee and like tea blends bundle. Like, I'd be so into that.
Or you could source from them and not have to deal with all the supply chain stuff. And they could, and you know that I think they're going for 150 points B Corp score. Like they're
nice. Wow.
They're
that's really high.
Canada. I mean, they're like OGs of sustainability.
Yeah.
Coffee, 26 years doing it. That'd be a great.
Wow.
That's what I mean. It's
I
like
love that.
The cradle to cradle idea. Like get somebody like that, that you're like, okay, the best practices, the best product.
Yeah.
And then you guys are quite a bit further along on the marketing path. So
I love that though. They're like the Patagonia of coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. Jeremy's favorite expression, the Patagonia of something.
I do say that about a lot of things as well. It's just such a good story. Like Patagonia is just
story.
So, yeah, it's good.
It's the case study that makes it possible, right?
Totally. And it makes it like economically compelling too. Because they've got such a long history, right?
I just wish their shit was like appealing look-wise.
Okay, aesthetically?
Yeah, it's just ugly. Like, I don't want to shop at Lululemon. I really want to support their mission. I need like a B Corp that does athleisure that doesn't make me look like I just came out of the forest after a 6-month hibernation.
Yeah,
that's,
fair. Yeah, I don't know of one. I know of a really incredible menswear athletic
do
stuff.
You?
But they're not B Corp certified. They're called Girlfriend Collective. It's women's wear. They do have like, obviously like women's wear can be worn by anybody. They're pretty sleek, really great colors. They kind of have a Lululemon vibe for their, like the style of their clothing. But definitely not a Lululemon vibe for like their values. They're pretty cool. Yeah. They're pretty
cool. They don't go out saying that their products are not for big size women.
Yeah, they don't. Do that. Yeah, no, yeah. They're very size inclusive. Yeah, that was that Chip Wilson stuff was so funny. Like
that was just
funny.
so detrimental. Funny.
Yeah, funny in the way that it's just like, what is this guy doing?
What the f?
Yeah.
What the f? So, Jeremy, what was your brand, dude?
What was your Tentree?
Tentree. Is it like with the nice, I know them, but do they, my thing's with the fabrics. I just don't want cotton that I'm going to soak with nasty sweat.
They have the good stuff. Awesome products, and they're an awesome company based in Canada, all right. Vancouver. They're doing amazing stuff. So they plant 10 trees for every product you buy. And they were using some third party like tree thing. I was on a B Corp call with them, and they were using some third party kind of like tree planting verification, something, you know, you're planting trees in Uganda, you're planting trees in the Amazon, planting trees wherever. And the visibility and the data into it was poor. They built their own. They used blockchain technology to like build their own tree mapping, planting software,
cool.
Which is amazing. It's this whole separate, so that's their nonprofit mission, right? So that's their sister org now, is this other thing that just creates true transparency into tree planting initiatives, period. And it was to support their own business. Anyway, very cool company.
That's cool. Cool, I love that, because I also think like they could make a lot of money with that too, as they should.
Totally.
It's an easy
and again, a market-based solution to a thing that just doesn't exist, that they can be their own largest customer to fund it. And then eventually it'll be, you know, a product that is valuable to others. So
love it. I got, as we're winding up here, Amanda, I got two final questions for you. Well, probably more than that, but I'll stick to the two for time. One is, not everybody's a B Corp, sadly, but there are policies, as we mentioned earlier, that going through are applicable to anybody, B Corp or not. Is there any one policy that you guys have or applying that you just think, bar none, we could share it in the show notes and say, you should have this in your team member guide or be abiding by this one?
Oh, that's hard, because I really think that policies you can pick two are dependent on the personality and values of the company too, because there's a lot of great B Corp stuff that we don't do just because it's not where our priorities are, or we
can't afford it. What's your favorite?
Okay, my favorite one is where you have an education program for your staff that's not directly related to the work, but that can support the work. So something that we do, because financial literacy for women was such a big part of Sheena's journey and why we built Founders Fund, is we have financial literacy training for our entire staff once a year that we do together. They obviously come in on like work time and do it, and obviously get paid for doing it. But I really love that, because I think that it speaks to how much we value our staff as humans and not just workers. But also it's just such an important gap. Like, women's financial literacy is a big issue, and we're happy to have a way to address it, and address it in a community setting too, where we're not just Googling what an NFT is and like learning about cryptocurrency.
See, training for everyone.
Yes,
definitely. Yeah, women, but for sure all employees. Yeah. I love that policy. I love it.
I'm still wondering, back to the NFT thing, how people are paying money for an NBA highlight that's like on YouTube. I don't get it. Is there anything exciting, Tease, Founders Fund, or anything that you guys have on the go that you would like to get out into the world?
Ooh, well, Founders Fund is coming up to our live pitch event. So we have five finalists that are going to be pitching and going home with some funding. So that's very exciting happening at Founders Fund, and always kind of the highlight of the year for us.
Nice.
Something happening at Tease. Ooh, I don't think I can say the thing is happening at Tease. I think they're still confidential. We have some really incredible partnerships that we're very excited that are going to be coming in towards the end of the year, beginning of next year. But some really values aligned people are going to be
Kim Kardashian
these products. No, it is not Kim Kardashian, but it's maybe somebody that's a little bit more tease like. But yeah, we're pretty excited about where that's going. And
you're going to set him off on random guessing here, Amanda. It's going to make it awkward.
No, I'm hoping that we recorded you talking about Kim Kardashian early, and so it's not just
so it doesn't seem like it's your thing.
Yeah, an obsession with Kim Kardashian.
Why are you so obsessed with Kim Kardashian? But yeah, so we have some big partnerships coming up that we're really excited about, that are going to be business wise very, very big and exciting and new territory for us as a company.
Are you guys in stores or not fully online?
We are. Yeah, we are. So we're in the Bay and Indigo online. And then we have, I think we're up to 300 retailers across North America, independent retailers. Yeah, it's that was a really intentional expansion for us in the last year, actually, because we weren't in a lot of retail spots prior to the relaunch of the company.
So great for brand awareness and distribution. Congrats.
And we're just trying to get into more hands. Yeah, we just want more people to try it and honestly just think about their health.
before we head out. Did you have any questions for us before we go?
I want to know what you guys think is the most exciting or important B Corp policy. Like, what's the one that really hit it for you guys?
Well, I talked about the financial transparency thing earlier. I think I also really liked having social environmental goals declared for the organization, but embedded into employees' performance reviews. So I just found it very interesting that, you know, we talk about it and we set up a social justice committee and a green committee, but that's the shit that often, not always, falls off because you get busy and, you know, we still feel like a startup 5 years in and like everybody gets busy. But when you have it busy, when you have it baked into, hey, at the end of the year, if this was a good year or bad year will partially depend on if you made a difference in this world through this company. I think it's good to put it on paper. It's kind of like, it's, I don't know, you can be with someone and I get marriage isn't for everybody, but it's a little bit different when you got a signed piece of paper. For me.
I love that.
Yeah, for me, it was our sustainable purchasing policy. So it came out of that, my like, aha, I was like, oh crap. So we actually put a sustainable purchasing policy in place. And then through that created a whole program. So we plant trees to offset our employees' IT footprints, but or our customers' IT footprints. But out of the purchasing side came an e-waste initiative. So we found the responsible e-waste handlers across all of North America. And then wherever our clients are in North America, we will responsibly make sure that their e-waste doesn't go in the landfills overseas kind of a thing, and that it's handled the right way and certified as such. And so that all came out of that. Doesn't fit for most businesses and industries, but it fit really well for us. And so it was an impact place for us. I was excited about.
And it wasn't B Corp. I don't know if it was B Corp related, but we also launched our unlimited personal time off. And if you need time, take time. And such a philosophical shift to treat people like adults, saying, hey, I'll trust you and you'll trust us. And maybe we don't need to legislate the fact that you have to work the system to use that extra sick day or take the extra vacay day. You need time, take time. You need to go to the doctor, go to the doctor. You need to take care of your kid, go take care of your kid. Without all this worry about, I don't have time left, I can't. It's amazing if we treat people like human beings and adults, maybe it could pay back. I don't know. It's like, I'm going out on a limb here, but it might pay back.
I love that, yeah.
We'll see. Okay, so Amanda, thank you for your time. And do come visit when you're in Ottawa. I will send you the Mudwater stuff. And we're down the road, so we should grab some tea. There's a David's tea near here, but we won't go there. We'll just celebrate with yours. I drink tea on the daily, so I'm super down. I hope you have, like, I'm going to go check out if you have some jasmine variation.
We don't, but I have a personal stash.
That sounds very illegal, but everything's legal here in Canada now, so we're good. So thank you for your time. Amazing work with Founders Fund and Tees. So inspirational. My dream is now to get on Ellen somehow to follow in your footsteps. Yeah, thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's been fun.